What's up, everybody? We're back again with a new episode. Some celebrations. No, not some. A lot of celebrations and some mediocrity, as always. So without further ado, welcome to the latest episode of Back on a Podcast.
I'm good. Can you just enlighten us? The mediocrity, which club are we talking about?
Of course, it's Football Club Barcelona. Yeah.
Okay.
They always come up with... You said?
I just wanted to clarify. That's all.
Okay. So let's kickstart this thing now.
How are you doing? Say how you're doing now. Did Barcelona score your week?
I'm doing great, actually. I'm fine. I'm fantastic. I'm buzzing. I'm doing fine.
When someone is using too many adjectives, I'm fine. I'm fantastic. I'm buzzing. Just know that the person is lying. You're trying to make that sound.
Of course, you're the detective. You're the detective, of course. Nigerian police will hire you.
So, first of all, I'd like to say congratulations to Manuel Pellegrini. I think he's one of the most underrated coaches in the world. Like, a lot of people tell you they are top 5-10 managers and you won't hear his name, but he's so successful. Malaga, Man City, and now doing the impossible, winning the Copa del Rey with Real Betis. I think it's actually very impressive. Although they faltered in the league because they started very strongly, but it's a nice one for him.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very, very lovely touch. I don't think he's like one of the elite managers, but I think he's still a very good manager.
He's not Pep and Klopp level, but I mean, he's good enough to coach any top 4 side in Europe, like in the top leagues in Europe.
To an extent, I do believe that. So, but at the end of the day, you said?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think he's good enough to manage like in Napoli. Surely he's better than Spalletti. And I think he's good enough to manage maybe a Bayer Leverkusen that has fallen off the pace in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I agree with you. If you look at his CV is... I think his CV is impressive. He won the league. He won the one of the most difficult leagues, which is the Premier League.
If not that Pep is Pep, like Guardiola is just so good. Remember that he was actually sacked after having a successful season with City. It was just because it was Guardiola coming in. That's why they sacked him.
Yeah, exactly. And even I just want to big up Joaquin. Joaquin, who left Real Betis years ago, returned to the club also years ago, you know, and he's winning and he celebrated naked once again. So, yeah, kudos to them.
He does not age. And we're hearing reports of Isco leaving Madrid on a free and joining Real Betis. How do you think he will strengthen them? You don't think he's finished, do you?
No, I don't think Isco is finished. He's one of all those moves, like, we can put it down to, like, the Neymar move, the Paul Pogba move, where they go to a club that they were never compatible with at all. So I think Real Betis was where he had his initial breakout, and I think he can still be successful if he goes there. Real Madrid didn't quite go as planned, but at the end of the day, like, I don't think he's finished.
Okay, I'll say that. I mean, you will never hear Isco from my mouth because I'm such a big fan of Isco. Like, his dribbling skills is insane. I think he didn't fulfill his huge potential because maybe he wanted to win trophies. He could have been the main man at maybe any other club, but in that Madrid team, it's so difficult to break in. Enough of Real Betis. Let's talk about Barcelona. Barcelona have lost home and away to Cadiz, home and away to Rayo Vallecano this season. This is the first time in the history of the club, in the history of Barcelona, that they have lost 3 home games in a row in the same season. So I'd just like to say congratulations to Xavi and the players for making history, since we're hearing that they are They are back. They are weak. There was one nonsense that Dani Alves said a few weeks ago that Real Madrid are lucky that we woke up late this season. And I'm looking at the table here, and I'm seeing that they were 12 points behind Real Madrid when Xavi took over. Now they are 15 points behind Real Madrid. So when did they wake up?
To me, I just think the gap, for example, for to do a league table since when Xavi took over, I don't think maybe something like 5 points might just be the real gap. But me, I'm looking at it this way. You know, I told you that already, that me, I'm not a delusional person. I just say it as it is. Some of all these players, they were overperforming. You know, that initial run of 15 games or beating or whatever that they tried to do. I'm not trying to downplay the run. I'm not disrespecting the run. That was an incredible run and a fantastic run of results. But what I'm saying is, at the end of the day, like, there was a lot of things that papered the cracks, you know. Some players...
Don't you think Pedri is a big miss? And I think the midfield and the attack is okay. It's just the defense that I'm actually disappointed with every time.
No, I don't think the attack is okay. I think the only thing that is a bit balanced to a certain extent that is the midfield. The attack is not there. Let me put a stat for you. Dembele made 17 crosses. Guess how many were accurate, Josh?
5-0. What?
I'm serious.
Wait,
I can.
Who are we blaming for that? Is it lack of movement or lack of accuracy?
Nah, that's his lack of accuracy, because that game, I can tell you with my chest that Dembele, if either the ball goes straight to the train or to the car park, like, there was no. Okay, go on.
I agree with you that Dembele was not great, but I mean, to me, the worst attacker was Ferran Torres, and we could see that Adama Traore performed much better when he came on.
Yeah, I think this is, like, I don't know, since Xavi took over, this is Ferran Torres' first performance in a Barcelona shirt. Like, other days, you could see, even if he's not scoring, he still offers a little bit to the team. So I sent you the stats. I want you to look at it yourself so that you see what I'm saying. So, like, yeah. The attack, going into next season, Barcelona cannot go into this season without, like, for example, you can see their rivals. They are going to buy Kylian Mbappe. We're hearing they are going to get Rudiger. You see, they are making top quality signings. Barcelona cannot go into the season as Aubameyang as their main striker. They need someone that is quality enough to score at least 40 goals. That's why we're hearing part of Lewandowski. And you need someone like Rafinha too, who brings in quality. The entire attack.
Mosala is another name.
I don't think Mosala is realistic. I don't like Kvaratskhelia. I don't think it's realistic. I think what will happen with Musala's situation is, I think at the end of the day, he will sign or he will leave and go to a place like PSG who will offer him the money that he's looking for.
We'll see how that goes. For Barcelona, I think the season has actually gone into nothingness, because now they are sure of their top 4 place. They cannot win the league. And I know they want to finish second out of 5, but really, does second or third make that much of a difference? I don't think this Barcelona squad have that fight in them to say, hey, we must finish second, because at the end of the day, it doesn't really mean much. So Barcelona fans should accept that the season is over. Not only them, Chelsea season is over as well. United season is over. We'll get to those clubs later. So it's not like I'm dissing Barcelona, but the season is
No. You're saying facts. Like if there's any incentive, Barcelona should just try and finish second. Because you know that if you finish the place you finish in the table, you earn more money. So Barcelona is
not necessarily the players, that's for the club.
Yeah, true. That's what I'm saying. That's what I said. Barcelona is a broke club, so they will need that money. So that second position should still be like a priority. But I think for me, what Xavi needs to do is the same thing. I'm going to put out a tweet tomorrow. I need him to start assessing a player. Someone like Fati has been ready for 2 weeks. You should give Fati like 30 minutes from now to the end of the season so that we can assess his situation, so that we don't go into next season planning that Fati will be in the dynamics. So I just think like if we assess Fati's situation from now to the end of the season, we can now plan accordingly so that we don't shoot ourselves in the foot going into next season.
Don't you think there's no point risking Fati like until he's really 100%? Because there's nothing to play for. Do you get
that's what I'm saying? But like we're saying the same thing, but you're not understanding where I'm coming from.
You're saying they should give him 30 minutes, and to me, I don't feel like they should even give him anything. Like, just keep him till next season.
Okay. Put it like this now. He has been ready for over 2 weeks now. Mm-hmm. They've rested him. He has trained well. He has been ready for 2 weeks now. That's something I can tell you for. But what I'm saying is, you cannot keep a player that is already healthy and say you're keeping them for next season. So what happens next season? You're keeping him and he injures in the first 5 games. And you're planning, you're already planning that this guy is part of your plans into the
season. Let's flip it now. What if you play like this end of the season and then he gets injured? What are you going to do?
That's what I'm saying. If you play him now this season and he gets injured, that means Barcelona now can adjust their plans and plan accordingly so that they can make sure that it doesn't affect them going into next season. That's what I'm saying.
I see. I see what is happening. You just want that second place desperately. I understand.
No. It's not. The second place is not an issue.
And I understand.
No, the second place is not an issue. I just feel like Barcelona now, they're making movements. You know, today, they renewed Ronald Araujo. They're making movement and planning accordingly to for next season. So what I'm saying is, these are players that coming into this season, we depended on Fati. It's something you know. Barcelona depended on Fati. They gave him the number 10 shirts, trying to make it very marketable and all that. At the end of the day, it didn't work out. He has not played up to, I don't think he has played up to 15 games this season. No, he has not played up to 15 games. I can beat my chest on that. So what I'm saying is, if Barcelona, like, to me, I don't even think playing him or not. Barcelona should just plan their stuff accordingly so that next season they don't be in the situation where by if Fati is injured, nobody can really, really score. You get it?
Yeah, we'll see. They know what to do, I guess, or they should know what to do. I hope so.
I hope they know what they're doing because we've seen this club clowning themselves every week.
Well, speaking of clubs who don't know what to do and who keep clowning themselves every day, not just every week, United lost again to, now this time to Arsenal. But there was a lot of controversy in the match. But before we get there, how good were Arsenal, especially in that first half?
To me, I'll put it down to United being bad. Hear me out. As bad as United were, Arsenal could have easily lost that game as well. United had chances. As bad as United were, let me put it like this. United still had chances to equalize and still win the game when it was still 1-0 and still 2-0. Like, if you remember. So, even when it was still 2-1, they still had opportunities and they couldn't just get their chances.
I think United started playing just in the second half. First half, I did not see them at all. I think from start of second half to like 65 minutes, United, till Bruno missed the penalty, that's when the game changed back to Arsenal's favor. So yeah, I agree with you partially.
Yeah, so I'm not trying to take away what Arsenal did. Arsenal, they were good, but I just felt like United too had chances. They could have easily been Manchester United could have easily had a penalty in the first half that could have made it 1-1, if we remember.
I was coming to that. But like, just to be clear on the results, did Arsenal not deserve to win overall?
Overall, yes, I agree with you. Arsenal deserves to win.
Thank you. And now let's go to the controversies, because United had about 4 penalty appeals, only one was successful. We saw Tavares having an entanglement with Elanga more than once in the game, once in the first half, once in the second half. To me, I think the first half was going to be too soft to be given as a penalty. So I don't know if you agree, but that's my opinion. But then the Cedric own, the guy was crawling in the box, and people are telling me that it is his natural hand position, so it cannot be a penalty. My guy, when did crawling on all fours become part of defending?
Exactly. Even he wasn't, like, let's agree he was crawling, but there was a moment where he looked at the ball, he now flicked his hand, I don't know if you remember.
There was a moment was making me more annoying.
So my question now is, why did VAR not intervene? Because to me, that's a clear and obvious error. Like, to me, before you answer, let me phrase it like this so that you better answer it. You have a better understanding of what I'm saying. Like, to me, you know, the Arsenal penalty, to me, that Cedric one was more of a clear and obvious error than the one they eventually went to check in VAR for Arsenal.
Okay, so you know how we don't agree with the law, but like sometimes I don't agree with the law, but I have to say what the law is. This is that kind of situation, because the law says that when your hand is on the floor and the ball strikes your hand, it's not a penalty. Like, they don't want to know the context. And so when you take it word for word like that and you put it in this situation, Cedric's hand was on the floor, and so in that case it's not a penalty. But to me, I think that it's too lazy just to put it like that. I think there should be interpretation.
But you know that when you flick your hand to the direction of the ball, that is a penalty.
But you know that stuff of flicking the hand. I think you need to. If you watch replay once, you won't notice it. If you watch it twice,
yes,
you won't notice
it. It's from the other angle. No, it's from the other angle where it's facing the goal post. Like from let's say from the bar line, the camera face from bar line, you see it in his face when he saw the ball. Then he now flicks his hand a little so that it will.
What I'm saying is the flick of the hand. I saw it, but then it is not something that is so obvious that like you really need to pay attention before you notice it. So in that case, they will use this their line, clear and obvious error to justify themselves.
Man, I just think Arsenal go away with one there. Let me just
No. Like I'm saying it's a penalty, but I'm just saying this is what the law says, and like, I understand why it wasn't given. Now over to the second half. I think Tavares was clumsy on Elanga. It wasn't given, but then Telles clumsy on Saka, and it was given in the same match. Please, how is that possible?
Let me even remind you, like, yeah, Bruno should have a red card. There was where Bruno almost.
Oh, no, I'm coming to Bruno. This is the second level he has done. This is against Liverpool.
Yes, yeah, true. This is the second time in a row, exactly. Exactly. You know, it goes back to that argument that we used to have. Like setting profiles. If that was Granny Xhaka, that was a straight red. Like, they don't need to even check Twitter. They don't need to. No, it's the truth. Like, you know, some setting profiles. Like, let me give you another one back in the day. Someone that is very, very. Someone like Rooney.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. All those kind of profiles. When they've studied you, they know what your game is about. If we saw like Dele Alli, if that was Dele Alli, that would be a red card, because they just know this person. But you know, when you're a good boy, no one will see anything. So it's just shameful to me. We'll see look at something very similar when we talk about the Liverpool Merseyside derby. I don't want to even talk about it because it's a shameful game.
So United should have gotten how many penalties now? 3. They actually got only one. And the one they got, I think, first of all, Tavares, yeah? Let me just say this. Tavares was wonderful in the first half, but he was arguably the worst player on the pitch in the second half, alongside Bruno Fernandes, as far as I'm concerned.
He cancelled out his own performance.
Speaking of... I won't say he cancelled it out, because Arsenal still escaped. But, you would take his performance over Bruno's own, wouldn't you?
Man, I don't even know. The truth is, like, he almost cost Arsenal the game. Let's be real.
He should have actually cost Arsenal the game if you have did it correctly. So,
like, he could have easily had 2 yellows and still cost them a penalty. So I don't even know how to rate the performance. But I would just say he had an awful game.
But what of Bruno in the now? now, not just missing the penalty because it can happen, but in the context of Ronaldo is on the pitch, but Ronaldo said he wasn't up for it because of whatever has happened, because of how he was feeling and the loss of his son and everything. And Bruno is actually the designated penalty taker, so Ronaldo was not in the mood to ask for a penalty and put himself under that pressure of like being the one. So I think we understand it. I'm surprised by it, like, because I know Ronaldo is ultra competitive, but I still understand it.
I get it. Like I was saying, I was arguing with someone. I was saying like, there's no way Bruno will step up for the penalty, even if he's the designated penalty taker. If Ronaldo wants it, like Bruno, you could see that Bruno respects Ronaldo a lot, especially when they are in international duties. You can see when they communicate together, respects him a lot. So there is no way. Bruno is not that kind of person. So I felt like Bruno stepping up, yes, that was his duty, but at the end of the day, he fluffed his lines. But let's be real, he fluffed his line. His penalty record has always been good, but he fluffed his line. Yeah, that was a very crucial moment. He turned the game around.
And I remember he placed one over Dubai against Aston Villa as well earlier in the season. I think Ronaldo being present has put Bruno under undue pressure to score penalties. Without Ronaldo there, I think Bruno would have been scoring more of these penalties. I saw a picture that now there's now only one real Bruno in the Premier League. That's Bruno Guimaraes. I mean, the guy is in the same form.
This one normally too. But shout out to him. That was a fantastic signing because he has paid. Like, he's one of the reasons.
This guy is a defensive midfielder with 3 goals in 2 games.
He has done well since he came to the Premier League. I agree.
And you are hearing rumors that Real Madrid are monitoring him. Of course, no surprises there. They steal from everybody. But we'll see how it goes. But obviously not this summer. It is impossible for him to leave this summer, just 6 months after. But we'll see at the end of next season. Maybe if Casemiro is leaving, perfect replacement. Off of this game, I think Arsenal deserve to win, but United can feel hard done by. Spurs being Spurs, nobody should be surprised. They were in pole position for the fourth place. Now they've drawn 2 games in a row, and they should have actually lost this game because Brentford were the better side and had 2 shots hitting the post.
I would just say Spurs, they cost me a lot of money. I staked in this game, and Spurs being Spurs, they were the one that made sure that I didn't get that
one. Before I laugh. Was it the only game that caught the ticket?
Yeah, it was the only game. Jordan's entered. It was the only game.
I apologize for laughing. I thought maybe it was plenty games.
No, it was the only game. That was the game that was left on the ticket. But what I'll just say is I wasn't surprised. I wasn't even angry. It's just Spurs being Spurs. I've said this thing. Like, I was that day online, there were certain hashtags, Conte out, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't change his tactics.
Conte out?
Conte out. He doesn't change his tactics. He's too defensive. Why did he bring a defender when you need a goal? Different kind of things. And it goes on and on. What I want to say is very simple. A team that's had the same spine since 2016-17, if I'm not wrong. Okay, let me say 17. Since 2017, guys, we're in 2022, and Spurs have had the same spine since 2017, and they've had 5 different managers. Let me count them: Pochettino, Mourinho, Ryan Mason took over. You now brought in
Nuno Espirito Santos.
You now brought in Antonio Conte. That is 5. And they want to tell me that they are ambitious. Like, the truth is, the spine needs to change. The only person that should remain in the spine should be Harry Kane. The rest needs to be shipped off.
What of Son?
No. Son is not the spine. Like, when you look at spine...
Straight down the middle.
Yes, exactly. The spine needs to change. So, at the end of the day, man...
What of the fact that they have... You failed to register a single shot on target in 2 games. How worrying is that?
That's a very poor start. That is very... Like, obviously, Harry Kane drops deep on that, but games like this is why I don't like Harry Kane being deep, because who is going to be taking the shot? You're not relying on only Son to do that. So at the end of the day, man, there are so many things wrong with Spurs. Okay, let's take a look at Arsenal. Arsenal, like me and you both said weeks ago, that Arsenal, they are like ahead of schedule in terms of where they are supposed to be. They are challenging for the top four now. That's because when you look at the team, they've changed their spine completely. Like, it's just maybe two players, let's say Lacazette and Xhaka, that are the main starters that were in the previous spine. But out of that, everywhere we look at are new players. So that's what I'm saying. You need to change the spine so that you can move forward as a team. But no, Spurs have been using the same people since 2017. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, to be fair, we're hearing they want a new midfielder and a new centre back. So I think now they know that they need that. At least Conte has let them go. So we are going to see if they actually listen to him. Spurs now are behind the race for the top four, are they not? Like, not just on the table, but like your favourites. It has switched again, has it?
No, I don't think it has switched, because before we came on the pod, I looked at their fixtures. What I would say is everybody has it in their hands to get to top four. So if Spurs win all their game, they'll be in top four because they still face Arsenal. Do you get it? So I think everybody still has it in their hands. So if Arsenal win,
Spurs have Liverpool.
That's what I'm saying. If Spurs win all their games, they should be making top four. If Arsenal win all their games, that's including beating Spurs, they should be making top four. To me, I don't see any clear favorites. All I would just say to it is both teams have it in their hands.
I think that's a fair assessment. But, I mean, looking at the fact that Spurs play Liverpool, I'm just leaning slightly to Arsenal now. Liverpool, Merseyside debut. Liverpool was expected to win. They did win. But then, credit has to go to Everton with the way they defended. We have both criticized and hammered Lampard for being tactically inept. But then, at least in this game, he showed that he can be a good manager in the future.
I don't know about that. So I'm not in the one of being...
No, because...
you asked me a question. Let me land. I don't know about that. But what I would say is, yes, they were good in this game. So I don't know about him becoming a good manager in the future. They were good in this game. Yes, I agree. Rightly so. And I think some decisions didn't go their way. And I think Liverpool got away with one. But all in all, I feel like if they play like this, I think this is the best I've seen them play under Lampard. If they play like this, this result and the one against City, like if they play like that, I think they have a chance. Because right now, they are sitting comfortably in the relegation zone. Comfortably, because Burnley has stepped up and now they are above them. So they are sitting comfortably. So Frank Lampard is about to break a record. So I don't know where you're getting him being a good manager from in future. So please, let's not do that yet.
That's why I said future. Future. He's not a good manager now. So I know. Liverpool got away with one, like you said. The Matip challenge on Gordon, should it have been a penalty? And the fact that it wasn't a let's start from there. Should it have been a penalty to you?
Yes, because he pushed him from behind. That was a clear push. Yeah. He wasn't going for the ball, so that was a clear push.
So now, do you think because Gordon dived earlier in the game in the half, do you think that played on the referee's mind at all?
Yes, I agree. It could, but to me, man, the referee should be doing their jobs better. Like I've told you, like the power referees have, that they can cost it relegation or they can cost it in titles. I think we named one of our episodes and something close to that. So I feel like referee should be doing better, please, because we've seen it time and time again.
Competence or something like that. The cost of something like that. Yeah.
Yes, one the of cost them. Of incompetence. Yes, that is it. Yeah, you remember. Yeah, that's the episode. So I feel like we've seen this thing time and time again that we see, like, okay, let's put it like this. Let's say Everton were to relegate. Everton will go back to this penalty decision and the penalty decision against City that cost them points. So you've seen it, two incidents that could have helped their season. So I'm so that's what I'm saying, man. They need to be doing better because, like, the mistakes, every week we think we've seen it all, and they go on and make another bad mistake that was crazier than the previous week.
But I think it's interesting you mentioned the City incident, because we know that the PGMOL apologized to them for the wrong decision. Now they've written another report demanding an explanation for why the penalty wasn't given. But Lampard is in hot water now because he said that it should have been a penalty, but he didn't stop there. He said if it was Mo Salah, they would have given the penalty to Liverpool. That is why he's in trouble now.
So I think he's not lying. Like, there's a shout for that. If that was Salah, I think most likely we
can. The point is, now, I agree that what you said is correct, yeah? And me, I feel like there's no freedom of speech in the Premier League, especially. You say anything and they fine you. But I don't agree with that. I think people should have more freedom. But the fact that Lampard knows the system already, don't you think it was naive to come out with this statement?
No, I think what it does is, to me, it helps their cause in the sense that it creates a controversy that next time the referee in charge of any Everton game has to be up on their toes, because if they are not on their toes, that means Frank Lampard has a case to what he's saying. That means it could look bad in the entire system, whereby this what Frank Lampard has been saying is true, that these guys are really incompetent and they favor some kind of teams.
So do you think that is going to be worth the money that he's going to be fined?
I don't think, man, these guys are big boys. Like, I don't think the fine, I don't think it means a lot to
them. It doesn't touch them, right? Yeah, that's true. And okay, so enough of the Premier League. Shout out to Bayern Munich winning the league for the 100th time in a row. but actually, the 10th year in a row, which is still ridiculous.
Let me give this one. Don't worry. I will take this one. Shout out to Mauricio Pochettino for winning his first title in 50 years of management. So, yeah, shout out to him.
Obviously, everyone knows he's your favorite manager. just quickly, just on PSG before we round up. The fans left the stadium, like more than half of the fans. They didn't celebrate the title win. They are still angry about the Madrid defeat. Do you think they are taking it too far, or like they have every right to still be angry?
Yeah, to me, I think they are taking it too far. There comes a time where you have to forgive, let the grudges go, then back your team, because at the end of the day, that's the most important thing.
I would disagree with you there. I think they should actually be angrier, because okay, let me say it like this. They've won the league 8 times in the last 10 years, so winning the league is not going to appease them. The only times they've not won the league is, I think it was 2017, Mbappe was in Monaco, and last season where Pochettino managed to bottle it. And then you look at, there's a level that a club is that there's a minimum requirement. So to me, let me mention a few clubs. You see, Real Madrid, Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, Bayern, Barcelona before this season, PSG, all these teams, their minimum requirement is to make the semifinals of the Champions League. Obviously, all of them cannot make it. But if you're in any of these clubs and you don't make it, then you are failed. Which is why I'm looking at Chelsea fans celebrating failure against Real Madrid. I'm like, are you guys happy about living in the quarterfinals, defending champions, supposed to be a big club, apparently, but you are celebrating losing in the quarterfinals. It's the same thing with PSG fans. Like, with the way that squad was assembled, with how good they are, they should have been in the final, to me. Like, they had the best chance alongside Man City this season. But even if you don't win it, at least make the semi-final. So, some people will tell me the team they lost to plays a part, Real Madrid is great, blah, blah, blah. But then, the fact still remains they lost in the round of 16. It is unacceptable. Let me just, another thing I want to add. Imagine if Liverpool and Man City had faced each other in the quarterfinals. Obviously, both of them wouldn't have gone through. One would have gone home. And it would be easy for us to say that whoever lost should not be ashamed because you're losing to another world-class team. But the fact remains, Liverpool or City going out in the quarterfinals would have been a big failure. So that's how I look at it. I don't care who you lose to.
But I feel like we should apply context. Because, like, for Chelsea, they didn't really bottle anything. Chelsea, they just... Real Madrid turned up, better team, won the first leg. Chelsea turned up, better team, won the second leg. And then the other day of the day, the damage was already done in the first leg. Why PSG bottled something? So I get why they are angry. So PSG bottled it. First leg, they won. Second leg, they were in the driving seat. And they now bottled everything. So I feel like yeah, there should be context to it in a way. But I still understand what you're saying to a certain degree.
Yeah, actually, to be fair. But I still think, I mean, you're leading 3-0, 75 minutes. You end up losing on aggregate. Then you bottled it again. Just finally, I want to have the confidence of Neymar. Like, it is just so amazing because Neymar told the PSG fans that they should go until they get tired because he still has 3 years on his contract. Like, they will need air. Like, they will be tired. They will need air. Like, first of all, he has every right to be angry that the fans are still booing him. But to come out and say this, is that not irresponsible and just shows a lack of awareness of what is expected of him?
That's what I'm saying. The only fan base that could have loved that done him was the Barcelona fans. And we all know what happened there. So, but at the end of the day, like, this PSG relationship, right from the time, it was never going to work because it was transactional. You deliver for us, we pay you. There were no emotions attached. There's no love story to us. It's a, yeah, and I'm not surprised these things are happening. So we all know Neymar right from his Santos days. He has always been arrogant. So, like, I cannot fault him for that. That's just who he is. I cannot sit here and applaud Zlatan for being arrogant and then bash Neymar for being arrogant. So they are just different characters. What I'll just say is fans, they just do too much. Like, there are some, like, yeah, you said?
Zlatan's arrogance is fun. Like, his quotes are legendary.
Yeah, to a degree. But, like, some people will still see it as this guy, you're being arrogant. But what I just want to say is, every fan base boo their players. That is it. Like, Real Madrid and Barca, they are the worst at this thing. They are the worst. And I'm just giving an example. Real Madrid and Barca, they are the worst at this thing. But at the end of the day, when you start being a good performer for the team, then everything dies down. So I don't understand why PSG fans, they are doing too much, thinking they are this kind of supreme club. Like, your players, they played well, you won a league. Be happy and forget about it. But that's their own.
Yeah. It's the money they spend, so they expect to be up there. So that's the end of the episode, guys.